This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind to Dynamite from the Post Wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear are opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Rewind to Dynamite is here. We are going to be getting into tonight's show from the Aragon Ballroom in Chicago, featuring a rare AEW championship match on free television. Could you believe it? And it is SummerSlam weekend, Way. Mm-hmm. And what better way to get ready for SummerSlam than listening to a rundown of every single SummerSlam event going back to 1988? Where could you find such a retrospective, Way?
Right now in this feed, just simply scroll down and look for John Pollock's History of SummerSlam podcast. This is a podcast that, it's an experiment that John first did for Post Wrestling Cafe patrons this past April ahead of WrestleMania, where you just simply sat down, looked at every card of WrestleMania, and you basically just kind of gave a little review of every single one.
Yes, this was my idea around WrestleMania time. And then for this one, I thought to myself, well, I could just get this done in advance, and did not do that. And then last week when I sat down to do this, I recorded, I was going to break it up into two, recorded the first 10 years worth, and it was 90 minutes. And what did I do after that? If the answer was save the file, you would be incorrect. And I lost those 90 minutes, and that I couldn't even go back to this for like 3 days. It was just like, oh my God, what a fool. Just gone. This precipitated that first of many phone calls to Way, as I needed to vent.
That's right. Yes, you did call me in a bit of a panic. Well, I mean, you live and learn, you know. It's not like this happens all the time, but thankfully
at least it happened during a very quiet week where I could easily squeeze in, 2.5 hours to redo. So what happened was I finally did do the first half again, and it was before the Hogan news. Mm-hmm. And so I was left with this dilemma. Like, if I had not restarted it, I might have thrown this out the window at this point. But I had already redone the first half. It's like, I've put so much into this. It's like, I either finish this or it's of no value. This, and then it's like I've wasted 3 hours instead of 90 minutes. So somehow I found a window to finish the whatever remaining years there were, and there are quite a few of them. But anyway, no one cares about this. The show is done. It is up there for everybody to listen to, going through some of the business notes of each year, highs and lows of SummerSlams over the years, and trying to slot them into tiers as well.
Mm-hmm. So there's a timestamp version over at YouTube, also for Post Wrestling Cafe patrons as well.
Yeah, Way really fancied this up on YouTube.
I mean, barely. But, you know, if you want to easily navigate to maybe your favorite year and you just want to hear John talk about it, I encourage you guys to check that out. It reads essentially as a bit of a history of the WWE itself, you know. We are talking 88 to 2024, so it covers a lot of ground, and John is probably one of the few people who I think would do as good of a job of something like this. So go and check that out and give John your feedback.
Yes. And maybe we will put out the history of Great Balls of Fire next time.
Maybe that one probably a bit easier to finish.
Also, do want to mention David Bixenspan was on Pollock and Thurston today. We're going to have book club coming out on Thursday. And then on Friday, we are going to be doing a special G1 show, Way and I, where we will also be adding on an XL version of the news to it. There will not be a Rewind to SmackDown Friday night. We're doing the G1 in the middle of the day. We're capping it at one show for the day because we're going to be very busy this weekend with a SummerSlam on both nights, where we will be going live Saturday night and Sunday night here on the YouTube channel. So do make sure you hit subscribe. It does help the channel out a lot, and you will be reminded when we are going live several times this coming weekend, covering everything SummerSlam related. Are you ready?
We're very close to 20,000 followers, John, on YouTube. And you know what happens when we hit 20,000?
Oh, man. What happens?
Nothing.
We start asking to get to 30.
We're literally like 119 subs away. So,
well, everybody stop what they're doing right now. We could just sit here and just wait. We could protest and just make there's no way everyone has hit subscribe that's listening to this.
It's fine.
I think guilt is the best form of effectiveness.
It could be, or just a pure annoyance. Yeah. I did also want to remind our Post Wrestling Cafe listeners, we have also up right now our Fantastic Four First Steps review from Scrump, WH, and Rich Fan, Team Make-A-Wish, reuniting to talk about
Wonderful.
Fantastic Four, which I got a chance to go see on Tuesday, actually.
Oh, you saw it?
I did.
Any thumbs up, thumbs down?
I'm not the right person to ask because...
What do you mean you saw it? What was your opinion of it?
I was so fucking tired, and these seats are so comfy.
Oh.
I don't think it's an indictment on the movie, more so just on.
So you didn't like it, but you don't want to flat out say it was a bad movie.
So I'll say I didn't love it. I guess it didn't shake me to come.
Have you ever convulsed in the middle of a movie?
No, I
haven't.
But it didn't shake me out of my sleep deprived state. But I mean, it was mainly on me, I would say. So
yeah, movie theaters must be death for you at this.
It's hard. It's difficult. Yeah. The room is dark. You know, the seats are so comfy. I really wanted to stand up. Honestly, is what I wanted to do in the theater. But I didn't want to look like a super weirdo. So I need to get one of those rumbling seats. That's maybe what I should have bought a ticket.
They're overrated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, well, there you have it. I think my next movie I have to go see is Bad Guys 2, so wish me well.
What's that, Bad Guys 2? What is that?
You can look up a trailer and then think about me watching this movie. Okay, that's okay. Everyone's entertainment for the evening. All right. Check out the Fantastic Four review. It's going to be a very busy weekend. We have, everything will be covered over the next couple of nights. To Chicago we head, where WrestleTix announced... the capacity was at least full of the AEW setup here, 1194 for tonight's show at the Aragon Ballroom. They will say goodbye to this venue on Thursday night. And we have got a video package at the beginning hyping up the Page-Moxley rematch for a little later on in the show. But beginning is the quarterfinal match in the tag title eliminator between the Outrunners and currently in the ring, Matt and Nick Jackson, who do not get an entrance, get the jobber introduction, and then the Chiron appears, where it just simply is the template. Talent name, social media, stat at the top. I love this.
Adorable. Great.
I think they could really run with this.
What, every week? Just one of these?
No, I think they can come up with it with new things each week to kind of just diminish their status. But the Outrunners, we forgot they were part of that big $400,000 8-man tag last week. So they are 200 grand richer. And this might be the first time we have had winners of any of these matches brag about the fact that we won money.
Right.
It's like they win these things and it makes no difference for these people. At least the Outrunners, they should have had new gear for this week. I think they could have upgraded from the Newports.
It's never nice to talk about how much money you make, right? You know, you don't want to flaunt it in people's faces. Maybe that's why people don't talk about it so much.
Well, we have a pretty heated crowd, especially for the Outrunners. And the winner of this match will go on to face the winner of the Gates of Agony Bandido Brody King match, which is happening Thursday night. So Nick gets involved, super kicking Floyd to the floor. They get the heat on Magnum and cut off the ring. Taz is remarking about the Outrunner's Newport style gear, and he's making all these cracks about it when Excalibur finally says, "You didn't watch the pre-show, did you, at All In? Because we made a lot of these jokes 2 weeks ago when this gear was new." And Taz seemed legitimately caught off guard and just explained, "Oh, I was in a meeting." So okay. It was very funny, I found.
It was a very long show. I don't necessarily fault him.
Yes. Yeah. When Mark Briscoe announced at 10:15 p.m. that we're just getting started, I think everyone was like, "Oh God, really?" They go for the double by elbow, but get interrupted by Nick's super kick. They go for Total Recall, stopped with another super kick. And then after the super kick party, Floyd powers up with a double clothesline. Crowd's going wild for them. Matt low blows Magnum, shoves referee Rick Knox, and then is caught in a schoolboy for a near fall. Nick then super kicks his brother by mistake. Total Recall is hit on Matt. Nick makes the save. And then Magnum is pulled into the corner, crotch first, as they hit the TK driver, pinning Turbo Floyd and the Young Bucks, the unnamed Jobber 1 and 2, advanced to the semis.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was a very hot opener. For me, I've largely enjoyed this Aragon Ballroom, but I felt like the crowd tonight probably sounded among the best they've sounded these past five nights. And I thought it was very evident even in this opener, very hot. The FTR Outrunners match on Collision was great. The pre-show match may be a little bit more disappointing, you know, just considering.
It's kind of a standard pre-show match.
Yeah, this one I felt was more of the quality of that FTR match. And especially, I think, having this like more intimate setting where everybody in the building knew and liked the Outrunners and responded well to all of their spots and really wanted to see them win. I think that really helps this team. So the Bucks, obviously being great heels, were a great team for the Outrunners to showcase their underdog babyface appeal. The crowd was just so hyped for them. So, good match, I thought.
Crowd was great, and I think the Outrunners, like, they've kind of had this like ebb and flow of being like this cult deal, but they seem to be in a pretty solid footing at this point in the tag division, where, you know, they're still doing aspects of the comedy, but they can also do like the serious match as well. I think after establishing that with the FTR Collision match, and they're a really hot babyface team that are, at least they're believable. Like, the audience could have foreseen them winning this match potentially, especially given the story they're doing with the Bucks.
Agreed. And I think they're always great for, like, you know, interesting vignettes. Like, they have a completely unique gimmick that nobody else has. This roster has a lot of great wrestling tag teams, a lot of great high-flying tag teams. They don't really have any other Outrunners. So at the very least, I don't know if they'll ever win a championship, but I would at least say I feel like their employment in the mid-card of the tag division should feel quite safe.
Okada comes out congratulating the Bucks, and they attack them when Swerve appears. This felt like such a convoluted way just to get Okada and Swerve on this show, but it worked for what it was. So Swerve comes out, and the Bucks get sent out by the Outrunners. So now it's 3-on-1 beating up on Okada when the Bucks save him from a house call, and Swerve climbs to the top for a Swerve stomp, landing on the three, and furthering our Okada-Swerve showdown that seems probably destined for Forbidden Door.
Yes, I would suggest so. Mm-hmm.
Or maybe World's End.
December? That's too far away.
No, I'm kidding. No. I'm kidding. I'm just throwing out ideas. Renee interviewed Mark Briscoe, and he's in search of MJF when Ricochet and GOA appear. I liked how they made this big deal about we're just GOA now, and everyone still calls them Gates of Agony on the show.
You know, it takes a week or two to get used to, I guess.
The rebranding is going to be tough for these two. And Ricochet informs Briscoe, you need to worry about us tonight. And Briscoe has become a different man and a different animal since All In. He's on the warpath. He's going to whip Ricochet's ass, and it's only a fraction of what I've got in store for MJF. And Ricochet leaves by calling Briscoe a loser, as these two would end up being in the main event of the show. MJF is backstage and notes that I was literally in the biggest movie on earth, and mentions Happy Gilmore 2, which sounds like it is a gigantic success on Netflix. And he knocks on the Hurt Syndicate's door, and Shelton Benjamin answers it. And he says, you know, with Bobby now out of the picture, we can just focus the three of us, referring to himself, Shelton, and MVP. But Shelton informs him MVP is not here tonight. And we never saw Lashley. So it really begged the question why they even had this locker room. Why was Shelton here tonight?
Great question.
He wanted to say he wanted to, you know, one more night at the Aragon Ballroom and take in the sights.
Maybe it's just in their contract they have to have a locker room even if nobody uses it. Why is Shelton here? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. No. He then shows the Rolex that MJF bought him and it's revealed to be a fake, and says, the only reason we didn't kick your ass months ago was because MVP stuck his neck out for you, and warns MJF that he's going to get laid out in a puddle of his own piss. You're out of the Hurt Syndicate, and Shelton gives the thumbs down at the end of this. Now, also worth noting, like the other segment that we had with Lashley attacking MJF, MJF had requested a camera to be here. They made very clear there was a camera here that I think your idea of how this all plays out at the end is probably going to be the outcome here.
To my knowledge, I feel like they've still respected just the whole avoiding the invisible camera idea. Have they not? You know, like I think they still, even if this isn't meant to be a misdirect, they might probably still let the audience
know. All I'm saying is, if this is all just a swerve at the end, it's at least logical rather than this is like some private conversation that we're technically not supposed to have a cameraman there seeing. It really would make no sense unless this were being openly broadcast for the purpose of deceiving everyone.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, if it is a breakup, it's a very abrupt one. And I think that to me is the biggest hint that this could just be done just to lead people in a different direction, to think that MJF is out of the Hurt Syndicate. Meanwhile, he's actually just trying to make it seem like he's out of this Hurt Syndicate so that he can maybe have a more successful cash in, perhaps. But it could also be them legitimately kicking him out of the Hurt Syndicate. It could be that. It's possible. Maybe
the answer is whether or not this is a real Rolex. That's the answer.
Well, he smashed it on the ground, so I would certainly hope it wasn't. Mm-hmm. I don't know Rolexes well enough to be able to tell or not.
Where do you think in the Aragon Ballroom did they find this this locker room?
Well, we saw this, like the Bucks had a similar.
Yeah, I know. They've used this several times now. This is not the most aesthetically pleasing.
No, it looks like super dingy, but we also know it's like a 100-plus-year-old building, right? So, well, yeah, that's all you get. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
G1 Climax season continues on the Post Wrestling Cafe as we march toward the final on August 17th. Every single match in the tournament will be covered. Plus, we're going back to 2001 for a review of The King of the Ring, featuring Kurt Angle taking on Shane McMahon and Edge winning the tournament. Plus, John and Way are going to be reviewing all episodes of the WWE Unreal series on Netflix. Ask Away, Post Pro Res, Collision Course, so much more can be found monthly at postwrestlingcafe.com. Shivani welcomes out Christian Cage for his first appearance since the attack at All In Texas. And he admits, I am an asshole. And the crowd applauds this admission. And they start chanting asshole at him. He says, for years, I have been numb to the world, obsessed with becoming champion. And I had my plan for Revolution. And for a split second, I had feelings, when he refers to looking at Adam Copeland. And that momentary lapse in judgment cost me my chance to win the belt. And Nick Wayne, Kip Sabian, you have not earned the right to question me yet. I've spent more on rental cars than you two have made in your careers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably true.
That's why you guys should have unionized years ago. You wouldn't have had to worry about these rental car expenses. Should be a company expense, should it not?
I don't know. That I'm not sure.
So he states that he didn't inform the patriarchy of his plan for Revolution because he didn't think they were competent enough to pull off the plan. So he admits, these guys were idiots that I was hanging around with for all these months. And he says that I did it myself and none of you know anything about what risk is like I do. Copeland, I heard what you said. And I've said a lot of terrible things about you. I threatened to snap your neck in front of your family. I told you I was going to take care of your wife. I even spoke about your mother. And how can he possibly get himself out of that hole when you've talked about a man's deceased mother and his wife? Well, you know, Adam, it's the game within the game. And you too were an opportunist once upon a time, and you would do anything to get to the top. So maybe I found myself, maybe I didn't. And we are so different, but we are also the same. Now I'll also add that there were all these breaks in this promo where he went to like acknowledge the crowd that at some points it didn't sound like they were making a peep at all. And I don't know if it was like a purposeful like part. I think I'm giving too much leeway here. Like, he felt very awkward in a lot of this delivery.
I think did you feel the same? He just stumbled and tried to save it by pretending that he heard something from the crowd when there.
But there were a number of them in this as well.
It was a long segment. You know,
it was a very long promo. I'm only halfway through. He says that the patriarchy embarrassed him at All In, and then says how Shayna, it was hard for me to get up that night, and then just started talking about her holes. I'll go very far when it comes to recaps with the Toni Storm stuff. I'm not breaking down the holes here. He says that he always answers for his actions. So will Nick do the same? Nick, you have more talent than I do, and I protected you. You have the tools to be the face of AEW, but you have to beat me in order to do so. You've already got one dead father, and now you have another father that is just dead to you. And I disown you. So as he walks up the ramp, out comes Mother Wayne, who goes to slap Christian. Sabian appears on the ramp to distract, and then that leads to a belt shot by Nick Wayne. They are disowning Christian and hit him with a concerto. And to cap it off, Tony Schiavone, who is back on the desk, just says, I fear that this is not going to be good for his career after the man is laid prone on the ramp after taking a concerto. Might not be good for his career.
He's probably taken quite a few concertos in his life, though.
You know, he's had remarkable recovery for a man that does have concussion history as well. So, yeah, this is a long segment. I would not say this was one of Christian's better promos, but you can see the directional change that we are beginning for Christian's character. I thought they went a lot further in like this babyface turn than I maybe thought they would in like promo number one since the attack. But you know, you can see where this is going, and it's a matter of, you know, you've got to kind of shore up this patriarchy program, and then it's the reunion with Copeland.
Or they could both happen at the same time.
They could. Yeah. They could. I mean, we kept talking about FTR. Like, it, you know, obviously there's going to be something with Sabian and Nick Wayne as well along the way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think, again, like when the turn happened, you know, the audience was already with Christian. I think they were already cheering him and wanting to see a reunion with Edge anyway. Christian is definitely, I mean, he was a heel, but he was also the type of heel that made you laugh because he said really outrageous things. So I think turning into a babyface, even if like in storyline he did really dastardly and said really dastardly things, wasn't going to be that big of a challenge for most of the audience, because it's kind of easy to like this guy because he's such an entertaining asshole, right? But I thought, like, despite maybe some technical screw-ups in the delivery, I thought the content of the promo was strong, you know, gave you a lot of reasons for why. Well, first of all, he admits and owns his mistakes and owns that he is an asshole. I also felt like the excuse for why Copeland should forgive him being that, you too, Copeland, did something, like, you too at one time were a heel, and that you did some really awful things as
well. You were a heel in the WWE in the mid-2000s. You had to do some horrendous stuff that doesn't age well.
Yeah. Adam. Yeah. That sort of whataboutism, I guess, tends to work pretty well.
Maybe Christian went back and watched Vengeance.
Maybe he did. Yeah. So I thought it was like, it was a fine way to, you know, like just basically explain why, hey, like, I'm not that bad. Okay. Neither of us are really angels here. So I think it's in good shape. You know, like, the audience again already wants to see Edge and Christian together. Certainly against Nick and Kip Sabian. So I think this is all in good shape for September.
Maybe I found myself. Maybe I didn't. Did he find himself? That's the question. And then we're going to Hangman Page and John Moxley for the AEW. Ooh,
we had a little segment in the back with Stokely Hathaway and FTR.
FTR and Big Stoker in the back. And Copeland has been banned from the building tonight. He calls the Hurt Syndicate cowards for their attacks last week. They are also conveniently not in the building. And warns the Bang Bang Gang Gang, who they are facing on Thursday night in the semifinals of the Eliminator. And the Young Bucks enter. And FTR explained they're happy that the Bucks won, hope to see them in the finals. They shake hands, and then Stokely tries to psych them out, asking, are you guys really no longer the bosses? And that ended the segment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, looking at the brackets, do you have any thoughts on who we might see in the final and who might win?
I mean, they're certainly teasing a Young Bucks FTR final, and I don't think you can tease anything stronger than that for the finals.
It's just kind of awkward with double heels, though.
I mean, for the time being, it's
so our options are could be well, on one side we've got FTR and Bang Bang Gang already in the semifinals.
I think it's pretty safe that FTR is advancing.
I think so too. Yep. And then on the other side we've got the Young Bucks taking on either Gates of Agony or Brodito.
I really hope it's Brody and Bandito against the Bucks in the semifinals. I know they're pushing GOA, but I think it's a much more attractive match for television with the Bucks against Bandito and King. And quite honestly, they could go with either team, but you know, based on tonight, they're at least hinting towards the Bucks. But you are kind of doing this gimmick that it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for the Bucks to be on this winning streak either.
Yeah. I think just like maybe booking babyface heel matches, it feels like it would be more sensible to assume FTR versus Brodito in the finals than FTR versus the Bucks. But, you know, they can always tell a story of like two heels facing each other and getting the crowd to side with one over another. So we shall find out as soon as tomorrow.
Hey, we got full brackets by Collision. So that was an upgrade over where we were a week ago.
Yeah, like no surprises here, really. So no real reason why we didn't get them earlier other than maybe they just didn't come up with them. Or I don't know if Bang Bang Gang or Colton being injured threw a wrench in anything, but yeah.
Maybe the guy who was in charge of the Chiron for the Young Bucks was also running the graphics last week.
Yeah.
Is there that possibility? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Hangman and Moxley, which is at the midpoint of the show, this is their sixth one-on-one match. And early on, John Moxley, clearly listening to my retrospective, going back to SummerSlam 2014 with Brock Lesnar and his Germans to John Cena. He was just landing German after German at the beginning here until Paige finally lands on his feet, but in doing so, like, nails his head coming down and he's grabbing his neck. It's like, is there anybody in this company that would be more of a hit in the balls if he got hurt than Hangman Page at this moment?
That does not seem to be stopping him from having the type of matches he would as if, you know, this was his last match. Yeah.
So he, Moxley then proceeds to hit his first of several pile drivers, the first being on the top of the steps. Taz says he wants all pile drivers outlawed, especially ones on the steel steps. But Page was okay. This was one thing where he is pile driven onto the steps, not an insignificant moment. And Excalibur goes, all Moxley has to do is roll him into the ring and he could win. And we throw it a commercial. It's like, would this be the point where you go to a commercial? If I were watching something, it was like,
you're
he's
right.
Got a breakaway on the net. We'll be right back.
And no, absolutely not. Like, this is a pivotal moment in the match, but it's just, it's a move on the outside. Let's go to break, right? Like this is just the way the match is structured. But you're right. Like, that was such a significant moment.
You have Excalibur literally saying all he has to do is roll him in and he wins.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
No, it's silly. It's silly. Yeah.
Moxley does not get the pinfall because Page beats the count at 9. Didn't really explain why Moxley was just going to ride out the count here, but Page beats it. And then Moxley,
he wanted to win on TV. He didn't want to win while, you know what, on Triller? No. He's going to win on TBS.
No falls going to count during picture in picture. We're just going to run it back. Moxley then uses the nails on the back of Page and then bites his back. I don't know if I've seen that one before, biting the back.
I'm sure it's happened. I'm sure. But,
Page regains his footing, absorbs all of these kicks, and fires back, sets up for the buckshot, but Moxley drop kicks him off of the apron and sends him onto the desk where he's going for another pile driver, but this time Page turns it into the Deadeye. But this table, undefeated on this show. Page does a backflip off of the turnbuckle into a tombstone. Then he goes to grab the wrists of Moxley to do the Danielson foot stomp and gets caught in a choke, breaks free, applies the lapel lock. And Moxley gets out of that. He hits another pile driver onto the edge of the apron, a gotch pile driver in the ring, and Page still kicks out. So Moxley is goading him into a slap fight, and he gets sent out of the ring, and Page to the top with the Orihara moonsault. Fuck ACLs. And he says that he goes for the buckshot, it's ducked, and lifts him up, goes for the Deadeye, but in doing so, swings Moxley into the referee. So this is when Claudio and Yuta appear, and we've got security at ringside because no one is allowed there. Security is all distracted by Claudio and Yuta, so Shafir makes her way ringside, sliding the belt to Moxley, and as Paige goes for the buckshot, is nailed with the belt, and Paul Turner regains consciousness, counts two, Paige kicks out, and the place goes wild. And the BCC are all being ushered out, and then, out of nowhere, Darby appears on this balcony. And dude, this is, like, we've been watching these shows for several weeks. The way they shot this, like, this balcony was so high, mm-hmm. and he leaps off of this thing right onto the BCC, and it was a wild spot.
Awesome.
So they're all taken out. There's a Deadeye attempt. Moxley escapes, goes for the choke, but Page eventually hits the Deadeye and then one final buckshot to pin John Moxley and, in theory, put an end to this feud for the time being, because it does look like Moxley will now peel off with Darby Allin after this.
Mm-hmm. Great match. I mean, I don't know if that's a surprise to anybody, but... Even like the announcement of this one, somewhat odd in that you're following a death match in a stadium with a regular match. Granted, like
banned from ringside.
I suppose that is a stipulation, but you know, like you're basically going from like a major stadium event to something that is small and intimate and I guess relatively pure, you know, in comparison for a match type. And I thought this was ended up being a completely entertaining and captivating follow-up to something even as grand as that. And I think they managed to achieve that simply because they did a lot of head bumps. Okay, a lot of drops on the head, like numerous pile drivers and ones that certainly made me wince. So that certainly helped. But it was the intimacy of this venue that I thought made the biggest impression on me. You know, the atmosphere was incredible and it made this match feel special in a way that I think, you know, the stadium show made this match feel special as well, too. But this one made it feel like it was just the hardest of hardcores inside a packed room together, everybody screaming and all of that sound like multiplying in this sort of like very sort of audible venue. I love the Darby dive at the end on top of this great match. But just as a way to, if this is the end of this feud, I thought a great end to it.
It was a great match and, you know, in a tough spot to have to follow like such a marquee match from only 2 weeks ago. But I thought this was a great television match. It set you into Moxley's next program. I thought Moxley was fantastic in this match. Like, I just thought all the little heel mannerisms and, you know, just bullying Hangman. I thought he had a really great performance here. I do find like the whole Colt Cabana thing. I just thought they were going to milk that for a lot more than what it was. That just kind of felt like a one-off thing. Like they haven't even made like the Hangman Dark Order connection to play off of it. Like I'm sure Colt will at some point return, but it just feels like it was this, you know, fairly significant, very bloody angle that was just kind of done for the night. And that was it.
I don't know how significant a Colt Cabana attack is in 2025 when Colt is really barely a presence on the show.
So why do it?
Because it's Chicago and because there is some history, you know, between Cabana and via the Dark Order and Page. He's about as good of a candidate as you could have for somebody in the back to take an assault like that in order to anchor Page.
Yeah. Well, that was We've got no update on the man, so.
That might be the end.
Yeah, maybe tomorrow. I got one more night in Chicago.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chalk-tees.com/post-wrestling.
They did another big video package, this one for the Chicago Street Fight on Thursday with Dustin Rhodes and Kyle Fletcher. Do you see any chance of a title change this early for Dustin?
I do. Yeah. I mean, I could see them. Like, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. Like, Fletcher was supposed to have the championship coming out of All In anyway, probably heading into a big match at Forbidden Door. I could see this being just a few week run for Dustin before they get back on course.
Timeless Toni Storm and Alex Windsor against Athena and Billy Starks. We had the double team maneuver by Storm and Windsor as they grab hands and danced toward the corner into double kicks in the corner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the heels took over and they beat on Alex Windsor for like 90% of this match. They double teamed her. They cut the ring off. Storm was yanked off the apron by Billy Starks. And then Windsor lands a discus lariat and goes for a cover onto Athena. Starks breaks it up with a senton atomico off the top, and then Windsor is able to make the tag. They all go wild for Tony, who has now incorporated the Mongolian chops as her primary offense, uses a Thez press, and then sets up Billy Starks for the hip attack. But as Storm's back is turned, Athena makes the blind tag, hits the hip attack, and doesn't realize Athena is now legal and comes off the top with the O-face out of nowhere, pinning Toni Storm. I really like this finish quite a bit. I thought it was very simple. It was clever. And I think AEW every now and then, like if that, there's one thing about some of their multi-persons, it's kind of like some of your New Japan multi-mans where it's like, you know, the person taking the cover and they are so, it's so rare that they're going to have one of their stars take the cover. But for this, for what you're doing, it made a lot of sense. For number one, it's like the O-face that is the finisher that Tony falls to. It's obviously a match they're going toward. And it was a bit of a surprise that Toni Storm is the one to take the pin here. So I like the ending of this quite a bit.
Agreed. I like that in both MJF and Athena, they have two, you know, contract money in the bank gimmick type of holders that aren't just beatable guys, that aren't just people that, you know, can take falls because eventually they're going to weasel their way into winning the championship anyway. No, like both MJF and Athena are booked incredibly strong. And in this case, she shows that she's capable of beating the champion even without this contract. So I love that. I think this match had the sort of other purpose of like introducing basically three or continuing to introduce three new faces onto Dynamite. Yes, we've seen Athena before. We've seen Billy Starks before, but never really in like a real storyline on Dynamite. And of course, that goes for Alex Windsor as well. So this match, I thought, did a great job of just integrating all of these new women into AEW Dynamite's tag division via Toni Storm. I think Alex Windsor, in like a week, they've done actually quite a good job of her of placing her next to Toni Storm. I think they kind of fit in terms of certainly in-ring style, but also in terms of just like whatever type of like strange world that Toni Storm has crafted. I'm kind of curious to see that explored a bit more. Meanwhile, I think Athena and Starks, like, obviously they have tremendous chemistry that they've developed over the years, and I think that's transitioning pretty well to TV. So they're doing really well, I would say.
And Starks would run Windsor into the desk as Athena tells Storm that it's only a matter of time as she holds the contract. Renee speaks with Hangman, who is interrupted by MJF, and MJF takes issue with Paige calling him a coward last week and says that Paige is the one that won't agree to face MJF unless he uses the contract. So MJF wants a title shot, but he doesn't want to have to use the contract, whereas MJF says, you know, Swerve, he was a real fighting champion. Paige is not going to fall for his games and try to get goaded into giving him the title shot. He says you either need to use your contract or earn it because there's others in line like Mark Briscoe. That's who you need to beat. And he threatens MJF, who takes off. So that is the obstacle in his path and thus giving a reason for MJF to face Mark Briscoe. Alicia Toot is with Willow Nightingale, who has not received an answer from her challenge to Tekla. And They are the triangle of madness. She is the trapezoid of grapezoid. And went to Tony Khan to propose a match. I can't recite this this verbiage, but she received...
You draw the line at like whatever Christian said about Shayna Wayne, and then you draw the line at this promo.
This, to me, was like Willow's trying out a lot of different things for her promos. I don't know if all of this quite stuck. So basically, she issued a challenge, didn't get an answer, so she just bypassed Tekla, went to Tony Khan, and said, yeah, that's a great idea. I was like, that's probably step one for the future. And says that she is going to kick Tekla's spider ass and rip off every single one of those 8 legs.
Yeah. Mm.
Is that a stipulation? Yeah.
So clearly Willow is trying to find some voice, you know, that is unique to her. Like, listen, she's at this point now where she is certainly one of the most over women in the division, and she's kind of gotten there without necessarily being known for her promos. I mean, it's her in-ring. I think it's just her, like, the sort of, like, personality she seems to exude with her smiles, right? And I've heard her cut, like, good promos before, but I haven't necessarily had, like, needed to hear her try to do this, which I think was some sort of attempt at, like, doing, like, a nerdy, like, cute nerdy type of thing, which I certainly didn't think worked in tonight's iteration. It didn't seem to really connect with this crowd either. I think she just needs to maybe be a bit more herself and try a little less hard, you know, to be cute. So I would at least say keep experimenting, maybe not that hard, but yeah.
Well, we've got Woman versus Spider tomorrow night on Collision, and joining that will be GOA against Bandido and Brody King in the Eliminator Tournament. The semifinal involving FTR against Austin Gunn and Juice Robinson, the Chicago street fight between Dustin Rhodes and Kyle Fletcher, and Chris Statlander in action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll be
on a Matt or Nick Jackson, maybe.
Chris Statlander?
In action. So it means it's going to be...
against a jobber. Yes, got it. Yeah, I'll be reviewing the show with Kate, actually, tomorrow night on a special Thursday Collision Course.
We look forward to it. Mm-hmm. Main event, Ricochet and Mark Briscoe. They showed highlights of their ambulance match from earlier in the year, and Briscoe sends him out of the ring when the Gates of Agony show up. They come down, and Ricochet hits Mark from behind, hits the Tope Suicida. We go to break, and he uses a thumb to the eye and then is sent to the floor. Ricochet grabs a chair, which Bryce rips away, and Briscoe would slap him on top of his bald head, which the audience was enjoying. Toa pulls down the rope, so Briscoe crashes, allowing Ricochet to hit a Fosbury flop. And then Mark takes out Khan with a dropkick through the ropes, leaps off the chair with a somersault onto Ricochet and Khan. And then it's Toa shoving Mark off the top as he called for the froggy bow. And the referee is distracted, and it leads to a vertigo onto Briscoe. Briscoe kicks out. And finally, Brody and Bandido run out to take care of GOA. And we get multiple attempts by Mark at the J-Driller. Goes for the small package, which is how he beat Claudio last week, and hits the big lariat. And finally, the J-Driller beats Ricochet, and Briscoe announces, "We're just getting started." He addresses MJF, who has brought up Jay's name, that being his brother Jay, and then a second time. "So I must obliterate your ass." He says, "I've never felt like this before. I need help. I may never see my brother again because he's up there. And if I kill MJF in cold blood, I won't be able to repent, because not one cell in my body feels the slightest bit of remorse. So make my day, damn it." And he calls out MJF. He wants to have a match right now. The music plays, but no one comes out. Max is on the screen and explains that, "Mark, I'm not an idiot, and I see you're dropping the comedy routine, and that doesn't mean I have to take you seriously. And I had no interest in facing you, but now Hangman has called me a coward, and I now have a reason to face you. And I spoke with Tony Khan, and he made the match for next week." It is a layup for these people to get the matches they covet. You just have to go right to Tony Khan. There's a lesson here. And says, "If you can make it to next week." And with that, the video ends, and MJF is behind him in the ring, kicks him in the balls, and asks, "Who's the coward now?" as he reveals a "MJF did nothing wrong" t-shirt, which I don't think this one's going to sell to the degree of the kosher pickle shirt.
Yeah, maybe not. We'll see.
He goes to put the ring on his finger when Hangman arrives, stopping MJF, teases the buckshot, and Briscoe tries for the J-Driller, and MJF runs away, as the announcers call him, a coward and the most hated man in this company. And that is how the show ends, with the announcement that next week it will be MJF against Mark Briscoe.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, like a big angle coming off of this main event match, which I thought was a good match. It continues to obviously put Mark Briscoe up further into a serious spotlight, which I think they're making a good effort of trying. I think Ricochet did a great job, both in ring, just with his selling, and also his out of ring antagonizing.
I found him really entertaining.
So entertaining.
Show.
Yeah. Now is not necessarily the time for him to be in a world title picture. Right now it's Mark Briscoe's time. And I think, Ricochet played his role really well. But this closing angle, I find it pretty interesting because they're definitely leading you to think it's MJF versus Page at some point. But I could also very well see Mark Briscoe versus Page being the
first challenge. It's how I felt at the end of this. I mean, I think, like, if there's a time to try this, it feels like now is, and everyone's expecting like MJF gets this title shot. And I don't know if I'd be so quick to just jump to that conclusion. I think that Hangman and Mark Briscoe, it's an interesting match to do, and probably not one that anyone thought coming out of All In would be a potential title match.
I like it for Forbidden Door. I do, like a double babyface, thing where, Briscoe has now is trying to develop a more serious edge to him. And what if he loses against Paige? I mean, we know they're friends, but what is a loss going to do to somebody who's clearly already this emotional? Right. I'd love to see maybe what that would happen. And of course, MJF already has the contract. So I know they're trying to do the thing where like he wants to kind of double up on his chances where he can earn a title shot and have a contract backing him up. They could still do that. But I something tells me they'd want to keep MJF versus Page a little fresher than just to have him do that match just now already rather than waiting for a few months.
Do you think number one? Do you foresee like this title match being the main event on the show, or do you think that there will be something? And if so, like, do you feel like one way or the other of like what is stronger to like they have to draw a number on pay-per-view? Is there a stronger option than the other one?
I feel like it strongly depends on the Ospreay component to the show.
That's the
if there's anybody headlining a show, in the UK. Even if he doesn't have a championship, I think Ospreay, depending on the matchup, would be the headliner. I do think it would have to be a title match, though, to maybe really justify it. I mean, can you see Swerve and Okada being a top match? No, right? Not really.
I don't see that one, like, closing the show.
Yeah, yeah. What about tag team? No, nothing. Right?
I mean, to me, the big matches that you'd be looking at would be Ospreay, if he can go, and Omega, obviously, like what matches those guys are involved in. And maybe it's a risk worth taking that, the Page and Briscoe or...
If it's MJF, then okay, yes. I think that's definitely a main event.
Like, you can certainly go.
Feels early, but yeah. What about the women? Athena?
Well, we're definitely getting Tony and Athena, I feel like, sooner than later. Like, they're really pushing that one hard at this point. Like, I can't even see anyone else, like, just being an opponent for Tony Storm on such
short
notice.
Somebody from Stardom, potentially. But, I mean, how are they going to build to that they have a month, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, Stardom's also, like, in the midst of their whole five-star Grand Prix as well. Like, it is kind of difficult for a lot of the top women in Stardom to... just bow out and not just be free for that day, but in theory you want to do some kind of mini program, and like we're 3 weeks away from this show as well.
3 weeks away, and I mean that's still a lot of time, but yeah, like almost like no mention of any other promotion.
They're not pushing anything on the New Japan front. I mean, CMLL at least are more kind of intertwined in the whole AEW, week to week.
But the biggest program there is MJF versus Mystico, and that doesn't seem to be something they're hitting on at all.
No, right now. No, not for this show. I thought overall this was like, I really enjoyed the first two matches, the tag match and Moxley and Hangman. Those were the strong matches. And I did like the booking for the other two matches on the show. I would say the matches, you could take them or leave them. They weren't like show stealers, but the booking of them, like I like the setup with Athena and getting to MJF and Mark Briscoe for next week. So, you know, it was a fine show overall. It does have that feel of like, you know, we just hit such a high and now it's sort of trying to get the wheels going now to peak mm-hmm. for another show. And, you know, there is that sort of like come down from All In is kind of a feeling you do get on these shows.
Yeah, very much so. Even like the Moxley Page match, which is obviously directly coming off of the main event of All In, just feels more like a, hey, like, you know, one more time before we really say goodbye type of like, you know, like swan song type of match between the two. But the show is about establishing a new champion in a Page right now. And it's about establishing the threats with the contracts in Athena and also MJF. And they're doing a good job of doing that. But it's kind of resulted in maybe like a lack of like major closing chapter at the end of this month at Forbidden Door. So I'm curious to see like how they integrate interpromotional stuff into this, if at all, in the coming weeks.
All right. That concludes our review of Dynamite. Again, Wei is going to be back on Thursday night with Kate from Montreal to go through Collision as everyone says goodbye to the Aragon Ballroom. And then Friday, Wei and I will be doing a G1 show during the day. That will be including a big news segment as well. So no Rewind to SmackDown on Friday night, but you will still be getting the two of us going through the G1 and whatever news is happening over the next couple of days.
Yeah, those are for the Post Wrestling Cafe, both Collision Course and also the XL edition of our G1 review. On the free feed, we'll be giving out our G1 review sometime in the afternoon as well, just as a bit of a sample if you guys want to jump into G1 coverage at postwrestlingcafe.com.
And then again, live here on Saturday and Sunday night after SummerSlam here on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel. So goodbye to everyone on YouTube, and we continue as we move on to forum.postwrestling.com. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.